Welcome to the Nittany Blues Podcast. By Penn State fans, for Penn State fans. Here are your hosts, Andrew and Vince.
What is up, everybody? Welcome back to the Nittany Blues Podcast, where we talk Penn State football, basketball, and all things Nittany Lions. Thanks so much for joining us here. We got a lot to cover in this week. We've got some football stuff. We've got some basketball stuff. We've got wrestling stuff. So plenty to cover, plenty to talk about. Vince, how are you doing? And where do you want to start this week?
I'm doing well. Busy as always. Let's start with Penn State football. Saquon Barkley coming back to the great state of Pennsylvania. We talked about that last week. Also got another Penn State alumni coming to the Birds and PJ Mustipher.
Oh, yeah.
What are your thoughts and reactions to that signing?
I like it. Yeah, obviously PJ is a dude. I mean, we saw him plenty in Happy Valley. We know how good he is. I would say, you know, he's definitely waiting to kind of catch his break, hit his stride, kind of have his breakout moment a little bit. So we'll see if it happens with the Eagles.
Yeah. And if you haven't been a fan for a long time or following very closely to Penn State football, if you look back to the 2021 season, Penn State started off 5-0. They go on a road trip to Iowa, and PJ Mustipher goes down with a torn Achilles. The season really goes downhill from there when him and Sean Clifford get hurt. So he was a big leader in that locker room, highly talented player. I don't know if the injuries have maybe set him back or not. He wasn't drafted, which was really surprising to me. But he's a guy that I would definitely believe in if I was an NFL GM. So really happy to see Howie Roseman make this signing and give PJ Mustipher a shot on the Birds, especially with the timing of the Fletcher Cox retirement.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great point. They're going to be looking for the next guy to step up at defensive tackle. It's going to be hard to replace a probable Hall of Famer in Cox. You know, they're going to be looking for some guys to really step up. Maybe Mustipher can kind of step in as like a relief guy, maybe flash a couple of times, get himself a longer contract with the Eagles or with another team in the NFL. But yeah, I mean, you're 100% right, though, about his kind of linchpin status on certain Penn State teams. I mean, all you had to really look at was the game after that Iowa game where they were at home. They were number 8 at the time in the rankings, and Illinois came to town, and Chase Brown ran all over him for like 200 something yards, you know, just ran all over Penn State during that game. And that was, you know, the first game without their stalwart defensive tackle. So that really told you all that you needed to know about how important Mustipher was to that particular team and just to the program overall.
Yeah, and that's just a game I wish I could erase my memory. It was like rainy. I was sick. I came out to that game in like a mask because COVID was still a thing. So I was like in the game in my mask. I was like wet, sick.
It was bad.
Still
times.
Like, still just yelling and being super loud at the game, and just it wasn't like a high scoring game or anything. It was just kind of a slug it out kind of game and grind it out kind of game. And it was just very low scoring and just to lose in that way. But it was just so heartbreaking. And I spent such a long time in that stadium. Like
eight overtimes rough. Will do that to you. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. 9 overtimes.
Time we lost. It was 9. Correct.
It was 9. Yeah. It was NCAA 9. Yeah. Record. And oh, man, like it just sucked to lose in that way. And like to that team. And at that point in the season too.
Yep.
You were like, hey, we lost to a Big Ten West opponent. You know, Sean played that game, actually. I think he was playing with like a fractured rib or something. And he still played. And you're like, hey, he'll get
for sure
healthier. Maybe he'll get better. And, you know, it's not doom and gloom. But then when you lose 2 games in a row, that kind of set things through a tailspin. So,
yeah,
things were tough when PJ went down. So glad to see him on the Birds. So speaking of leaders, Coach Franklin in his spring ball presser said 2 guys that he expects to be leaders and who he's kind of asked a lot of in the locker room are KJ Winston on the defensive end at safety and Tyler Warren, who really could have went to the NFL this year, decides to stay for Penn State. He expects him to be a leader on the offensive side of the ball. What are your thoughts on his comments, and who are other guys on the Penn State roster that you think could step up and be leaders, especially as position battles are on their way in spring ball?
Yes, that's a great question. So on the topic of Winston and Warren, I think both of those guys are terrific examples for Franklin to point out. I feel like KJ, you know, he's a guy who can kind of lead by example. We saw how hard he plays. He, you know, he's very smart with where he is positionally. So, you know, he's a guy who I think a lot of some of these younger players, especially in the secondary, since we're going to be replacing a ton of guys, can look to as an example and say, you know, this is the kind of mindset that I have to have. This is the kind of preparation that I have to have. This is the intensity that I need to play with, et cetera, et cetera. So I feel like KJ Winston is perfect for that. And then on the offensive side of the ball, I mean, Warren's just a guy who's been around for so long, and he is just a guy who everybody can look to as the prime example of like dependable. He just goes out there. He does what he does really, really well. He's very effective for the team. He's really like just one of the key motors that like kept the offense moving at times, especially when they were struggling in certain aspects. You could always kind of count on Tyler Warren being a force to kind of move the sticks. So he's a guy that, you know, similar to Winston in a way, like lead by example. Like, do your job, do it well, be accountable, and just go out there and play with your hair on fire in certain cases. So, you know, I love both of those guys. But outside of that, you know, I think some other like leadership candidates, you know, I think you can always easily say Drew Aller, even though he's, you know, publicly a very like soft-spoken kind of reserved guy. I think that you can almost look to like a Jalen Hurts as like kind of an example of how you don't have to be like this fiery Tim Tebow like leader to still be an effective leader in a locker room. You know, you lead by example, you have cool, calm confidence, you kind of have a solid direction in what you're doing with the offense. Like Jalen's not a guy who's out there like reaming into people and stuff like that. He's just out there like looking cool as a cucumber. And that is what helps radiate to the rest of the team in certain aspects. So I feel like Drew can also kind of emulate certain parts of that leadership style. Outside of that, I think another interesting candidate for like more of like a leadership mindset would be Julian Fleming. You know, this is a guy, even though he hasn't been with the program for very long, this is a guy who came into, you know, what I would kindly call an embattled group in the wide receiver room. You know, they did not have a very good year last year, and Julian is coming from one of the most effective and dangerous wide receiver rooms in the entire country. And I mean, obviously, like I said, he hasn't been there as long as guys like Keandre Lambert-Smith. But I feel like those two guys together can kind of set the tone a little bit for these wide receivers because, you know, collectively, they're far and away the most effective options. So they need to kind of like help set the thermostat in a way for those guys, you know, especially because we're still kind of waiting for that wide receiver two, wide receiver three to really solidify itself. That never materialized last season. So I'd love for those guys. And then on the defensive side, I mean, you could really look to Abdul Carter. You know, he's going into his third season now. He's like kind of the star of the defense now. So I think he can definitely take a leadership role. He's a pretty fiery, competitive guy. He was fighting through an injury during the Peach Bowl last season. So I think he's a guy that a lot of people can look to, you know, especially because we're replacing so many pieces across various parts of the defense. So those are some guys that are really kind of on my radar, but you know, there's really not that many guys admittedly across the entire team that you'd point to and be like, ugh, like, I don't know about them as a leader. Like, I feel like there's just a bunch of like quality stand-up guys on the program.
Yeah, I'm in agreement with you there. Anytime I've ever talked to a Penn State player, I've run into a few and they're always well-spoken, you know, just doing good in the community, being great leaders. I think it's just something that Penn State does really well. Two guys I really expect to like step up on the defensive end are defensive tackles in the middle who are coming back, Hakeem Beamon and Devon Ellis. Mm-hmm. I expect them to be really big in the middle, and you know, that's where things start. They start up front. And same thing for the other side of the ball. I'm looking at Nick Dawkins, who came back for his sixth year, has that COVID year of eligibility, and he was backing up Hunter Norzad last year at center. And if Hunter went down, and I think Nick was in there at times, actually, like I didn't think there was really much of a drop off in performance. And if you look at the Eagles, where they got a lot of leadership from Jason Kelsey, I think the center is really a really important position for people to get leadership from. And I do know Nick is very well spoken. He's very respected in the locker room. He actually did an internship at the Y when I was working there last summer. like great guy. Everyone liked him. Just gets along with everybody. When I went to the like award ceremony thing for the end of year banquet, when he was getting an award, he was definitely one of those guys that got the loudest cheers from his teammates, and you know, really well liked, well respected guy. And
that says a lot.
It does. And those things matter, especially when you have a team that's so big, like, you know, 90 to 100 players. Like, it's when you have respect from that many people, that's a really big deal. So I expect big things from him in his last season at Penn State. Also has a lot of athletic connections with Darryl Dawkins and Brian Dawkins from the Eagles, actually. That's his cousin, I believe.
It always comes back to the Eagles in some way or another.
Yeah, so yeah, he's a Philly guy, Lehigh Valley area, got that energy. And I expect big things from him this year. So I'm really looking forward to see him play as he starts to compete for that starting center spot. Some of the other guys on the roster, like Cooper Cousins. So really looking forward to see how that position battle opens up. I think there's going to be a lot of other position battles that could be interesting too. Coach Franklin talked about how Drew Shelton got surgery in the off season in his shoulder, so he hasn't been practicing. So that it's going to take a while to get him going, and they're hoping to have him early on in the season. He talked about how JB Nelson was a guy who can shift from guard to tackle. And really, if he has the lateral movement skills, that guy could be a stud at tackle. Like, just seeing him in person, he's a huge mountain of a man, really tall too. Like, he's one of those guys you like look straight up just because he's like that much taller than you. And I'm a guy who's 6'1". Like, I'm not short. And like, I felt like I was looking up like when I saw him in person. So if he has that lateral movement ability and the wingspan to hold off those pass rushers, I think that's a role he could do really well in. You also got Javon Williams. He talked about how Nolan Arucci increased his weight up to it was 305 or 315. I want to say 315, but he was saying that at 6'8" for Nolan Arucci, he kind of looks skinny, you know, being that tall on 315 for an offensive lineman. So, you know, can still add some more mass there. So those are a couple, the tackle positions, you know, replacing Olu and Caden Wallace and Drew Shelton dealing with a bit of an injury that he's recovering from, or not an injury, a surgery that he kind of played through. So
yeah,
the tackle position, the center, really that offensive line, that's an area where I'm really excited to see the position battles and where they play out. Another spot, number three running back, Cam Wallace. There's been talks about him adding a lot of muscle without losing any of his explosiveness or his speed, which is, you know, really important for durability at that running back position. Also talking about London Montgomery, he's trying to fight and earn some playing time in the running back room, along with Quinton Martin, a freshman out of the Pittsburgh area.
Oh yeah.
Five-star guy. And Franklin said coming into camp, he was expecting him to be kind of raw, but the vibe I got is that he's picking up things very quickly and he's kind of ahead of schedule from where Franklin had anticipated him going. So I thought that was another really interesting position battle because, let's face it, if we're being realistic, this is probably going to be the last year of Nick Singleton and Catron Allen. Those are two guys that both can have NFL jobs if they want them, you know, barring, you know, injury hurting their draft stock. Those are guys you're probably going to lose next year. So this is a position that is not only important if there's an injury, but heading forward into 2025 for Penn State. So those are two position battles I'm really looking forward to. Andrew, what are some of the biggest position battles that you're looking forward to seeing on Penn State's roster?
Yeah, so all the ones that you mentioned are definitely on my list. I would also put, like I said, that number three receiver spot in there. You know, we saw, like I said, just some guys shuffling in. We saw some injuries keep guys from really kind of reaching what we thought was their potential at that particular position. I mean, we thought we were going to see some really good things by Harrison Wallace, and he was kind of hamstrung with an injury for the later part of the season. So, you know, definitely going to be keeping my eye on that. Definitely all the corner spots. You know, we've got like a plethora of guys who are going to be replacing three guys who are likely all going to be drafted. But that's a lot of experience and a lot of talent that you got to replace. And you've got some young talent in there. Like there's so many guys who can potentially fill these spots. And so I think the spring ball practices and the scrimmage and the early goings of the season are going to tell us a lot about that particular position. It's because we need to know like who's going to stick. Like we know certain guys are good in spots, but you know, if we were to take like the very small sample size of the Peach Bowl, like that position is far from figured out as far as like, you know, a succession plan, if you will, to like the three starting corners. So we need to really figure that out, see like who's going to be like that dude or dudes preferably to really step up in there. I feel pretty good about the safeties. I mean, you got KJ and you've got
taking Reed.
Yes. Reed. Thank you. Yeah, I feel good about like both of those guys. I feel like, you know, they're very smart. And I mean, KJ Winston is just like a safety blitzing machine. So if Tom Allen is willing to send him on a couple of those, I love that. But yeah, then I think like there's still a little bit of intrigue, though, around the linebackers, given the move that they made with shifting Abdul up to defensive end. I mean, you've got Tony Rojas, you've got Kobe King, who you feel pretty good about. And so then it's all about probably that middle linebacker spot, or maybe even the other outside linebacker, if I'm not thinking of their positions correctly. But there's a lot of young talent who kind of fit like that tweener linebacker slash edge rusher type physique, if you will. Like we saw a couple of those guys coming up. There's some good young talent to slot in there. So that's another one I'm looking at. But yeah, all the ones you mentioned are definitely, I would say, like 1A and 1B, though.
Yeah. And kind of a funny story. Franklin mentioned about the main reason why they decided to move Abdul from the linebacker to the defensive end spot was just because, you know, kind of through the strength and conditioning program, he was just adding muscle and it was getting harder and harder to keep that weight lower for the linebacker position. And he said he actually recruited him to be an edge rusher. That's what he wanted to recruit him to do. But his dad was like, oh, my kid's a linebacker. He said in his presser. So he's like, he was just kind of like, all right, whatever, man. I'm like, your kid's going to be a stud at either position. We just think like edge rusher is his best fit.
Interesting. And
so later down the line, that's how it played out. So I thought it was interesting, but kind of what I do think everything kind of worked out because, you know, at edge rusher there, you had Chop and Adisa Isaac with Denai Denisai, and you just had so many good edge rushers last year, and it was good to have Abdul in that spot. And now when you have, and he said Kobe King is a guy who's kind of like that too, who maybe would be an edge rusher in the future and can bulk up if needed. But when you have guys like, you know, Tony Rojas and, you know, Kobe King and you have Dominic DeLuca, like, You got some guys back there, and along with the plethora of recruits they've got at the linebacker spot, a lot of competition for it to open up to guys who want to claim it. And, you know, especially since that's one of the highest profile positions they have been able to recruit. And when you lose two guys like Chop and Adisa, like, that's really hard to replace. And when you have a guy like, yes, Abdul coming in, like, that makes that transition a lot easier. And Chop Robinson even just said after he made that switch, he was like, yeah, Abdul Carter is going to be unstoppable. Like, it wasn't like, you know, I'm excited to see how he does. I think he's going to do really well. He was just like, flat out, he will be unstoppable. Like, that's what I freaking love to hear, man. Like, that is exciting. Yep. That gets me pumped up. See him with his hand in the dirt. Like, that's some cool stuff right there. And another thing I wanted to circle back to, Coach talked about, was Jaden Reed. He talked about how some of the safeties, KJ and Zaki and Jaden, all had a really good offseason. And he said, you know, they'd put Jaden Reed in that slot position or the line position. And on the Hoosier Huddle, you know, when we paired with them, we talked about how, you know, Tom Allen likes to do a lot of five defensive back sets. So you might actually see three safeties in there, and you might see Jaden Reed in that slot position quite a bit, or the line, as they call it.
Awesome. Yeah, that'd be exciting to see. I mean, we have, you know, I would say some raw, unproven talent across the entire like defensive back group. But yeah, I mean, if we want to like start to get creative, I mean, there are so many safeties on this team that coming in were so highly recruited. And the same is true for cornerback as well. But for some reason, I mean, Penn State just really went on a tear with recruiting some really stud safety. So if the more that we want to use these guys, you know, just to make full effect of the defense, you know, especially if like we're not going to be like super stalwart, maybe at like the cornerback spots, like we enjoyed with Dixon and King and such, you know, I'm all for it. Let's try some stuff out.
Yeah. And I think they did a good job. They did get two, you know, veteran corners who are proven from other programs. I think that was a good thing that they were able to hit on in the transfer portal. Now, will they transfer over to Tom Allen's scheme and Penn State? Nobody knows. We'll find that out in September, but yeah, on paper, it is something that you, Nittany Lion fans should be really excited about, especially with, you know, the schedule change and, you know, getting ready for that arms race with Ohio State. Ohio State just, they're Alabama North up there since the Saban retirement. So that is going to be a battle in Happy Valley in November.
Amen to that.
Yeah, so any other football news or do you want to move on to basketball?
I've got just one more thing that I want to talk about. It's not, you know, super important or anything like that, but obviously we know all of the hoopla that's been going on with Saquon. He made his way back to Penn State, celebrated downtown as we saw. So he was really just kind of enjoying, you know, where he got a start, if you will. He was also doing a little bit of recruiting as well. He posed for a picture with star running back commit Messiah Mickens, who's out of Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. Yeah, just posed with him for a picture at this Happy Valley United event, I believe it was. But so, you know, he's out here doing the good work for Penn State, both just in terms of crushing it in the NFL, but also lending a hand when it comes to recruiting.
Yeah, and that's what you love to see, you know, from Penn State. And I do feel like despite this new age of the transfer portal, Penn State does do a really good job of retaining their players. And a lot of them come back. Like you see tons of Penn State greats, you know, during intermissions. They're given the We Are chance to Beaver Stadium. And I love when guys like that come back. I think it's just a testament to the program when guys return to campus. And the fact why that matters is, you know, if you're a high school player and you're seeing this guy who's in the NFL and they still come back to Penn State where they played in college, like that's a big deal. Like that shows you they had a good experience at Penn State. Like it wasn't like, oh, they're miserable for 4 years and they were just doing what they needed to do to get to the NFL. Like they had a great time. And that matters if you're a high school recruit. Like I really enjoy when I was being recruited to Lock Haven, some of our guys who were going to graduate, they hung around as like graduate coaches, some of the alumni, and they would like train with us. And that was just really cool to be a part of that tradition of guys who came through the program and were successful before you. So that's something on my scale that I thought was really cool heading into my collegiate career as a distance runner. So I imagine, you know, these were high school recruits for Penn State football are experiencing the same thing.
Yeah, I mean, it certainly doesn't help. And, you know, like I'm not going to sit here and say that like it's less impactful to have like other guys coming back, but Saquon is one of those like star players. Like he's in the same echelon as like if Micah Parsons were to come back and we have like one of the top defensive ends in the country visiting Penn State for the weekend, like a picture with Micah would be a pretty tough sales pitch to beat, I think.
Oh yeah. Oh, I also saw Trace with Saquon at Champs. He was also there. So he was talking to some guys and pretty cool to see. It was nice to see those two back to get together again. And what no better spot than Champs downtown, right?
Amen. Yeah. As far as like quarterbacks go, Trace is without a doubt like the coolest Penn State quarterback that would like come back. You know, like he just seems like he would be like a just such a good time to hang out with.
Yeah, nobody had more swag than Trace McSorley.
At the quarterback spot, yes, that is 100% true.
Yeah, so definitely nice to see the guys coming back. And yeah, a lot of big things happening with Nittany Lion football. You know, I'm doing my mock drafts, and for the Eagles, I'm trying to get like as many Nittany Lions as I can. So
as is tradition.
As is tradition. So that's something I've had fun with as well. But let's move on to Penn State basketball. And there's been a lot of news happening. Penn State was able to beat Michigan, finally, in a sport when it mattered, beating the Wolverines in the first round of the Big Ten tournament. It was very close at times. I think in that game, they kind of underperformed a bit. But in the second half, they were able to pull away from Michigan and keep them at arm's length and just do what they needed to do to move on to the next round. And Indiana, that was an interesting game. This is a team we had beaten four consecutive times, and it was rough, man. Like there was some voodoo magic. Like you just have that feeling like God did not want Penn State to win that basketball game.
Well, yeah, like, I mean, it's like, what did they end that game on? It was like 0-5 or something like that. It was bad.
Yeah, but really, the first half was some of their best basketball of the season. They were moving the ball extremely well. Every possession, it seemed like they were getting a catch-and-shoot three or a layup attempt from the paint. And they go very low percentage. They shot like 23% maybe from three. Not very good when they had been shooting very close to 50% in their first two matchups. So they weren't hitting threes. And then they were 1-for-14 on layups. Layups.
Ew.
And that is the reason why you run offense. That is exactly what you want if you're Mike Rhodes or any Penn State fan. You want them running their offense to try to make layups and get open three-pointers. That's ideally what you want. And like that was like the best I had seen them do that all year. It was just for whatever reason, shots didn't fall, and that was frustrating. But and kind of despite all that madness, Penn State was only down by, was it like single digits at half? I think they were down by like 9. It was like 9 or 11. They're somewhere around that 10-point range. It might have even been less, actually. It might have been like 6. But anyway, like, it was one of those things where, yeah, I think they were down 11 and then maybe cut it to 6 by halftime. And I was just like, how are we down 6? We are 1-of-14 for layups. And really, like, the thing that kept them in the game was we were just making free throws and Indiana wasn't getting as many attempts. And in the second half, they came out guns a-blazing. They erased that deficit immediately. I believe an 11-point lead, and then it just kind of slowly dissipated, and we got into this dogfight, and the offense, things just stopped clicking. Indiana really locked down defensively. Penn State had a few, kind of silly, uncharacteristic turnovers where they just gave the ball away or were trying to force things that weren't there, and Indiana got lucky. That they had a lot of fouls. Both teams had a lot of fouls on this one. Indiana was fortunate that really their guys all pretty much had 3 fouls, but Penn State was unfortunate in the fact that Nick Kern fouled out along with Akutis Wahab later in the second half. So really, when you're a team that does not have a lot of depth, especially at the center position and with Nick Kern's athleticism, it was a tough way to lose. And at the very end of the game, tied 59-59. We've been talking about it the entire season. Rebounds. Indiana misses a shot. Penn State rebounds. Worst case scenario, you take them to overtime. But unfortunately, they don't box out good enough. Indiana gets the rebound. They get a layup. And Penn State has about 5 seconds to shoot. They did find a really good look. When Puff released it, I thought the ball was going in, but unfortunately, shot did not fall and Penn State was eliminated. So really heartbreaking loss for the Lions. I was hoping they'd get into the NIT. I saw they had a 23% chance for the Michigan game, and I was hoping that Michigan win would kind of help bump them up. Fortunately, it was not enough, so their season is over. Some guys have hit the transfer portal. But I was really surprised, especially with all the teams that declined the invitation to the NIT tournament. So before we talk about the Penn State players in the transfer portal, what are your thoughts on these teams declining an invitation to the NIT? Because this is still top 100 teams in the country, and you have a chance to develop your players, and they're just saying, hey, we're not sending our team. What are your thoughts on that?
I don't like it. I don't like it. Like, you have a chance to compete, and like, as a program, as a team, like, what more do you want? I mean, obviously it stinks that you're not reaching your ultimate goal of going to the NCAA tournament, but the NIT can do some good stuff for you. I mean, they went to the NIT with Chambers, and then what was it, the next year or the year after that, they were on the fast track to being like a top 4, top 5 seed in the NCAA tournament. Like, it can be a springboard for certain stuff. Like, you got, I don't know. That seems very strange. It seems very symptomatic of something else. Like, maybe it has like some kind of stink of like transfer portal name, image, and likeness sorts of things going on, where like certain guys just weren't committing to play in the NIT. I mean, I don't want to speculate too heavily, but it just seems very odd that this would be the year that a group of teams would do something like that. You know, it just seems too coincidental not to be kind of a result of something else. What do you think?
Yeah, I thought it was insane. It wasn't like it was one or two programs. Like, I messaged you the list earlier. It was a really long list. It was.
So does that mean Penn State is like going to get an invite now because these teams are declining?
Unfortunately not. They released the field after Selection Sunday. And I did see one team with the losing record there, Xavier. They had the same record as Penn State, so they're 16-17 as well. So to see them getting invite over Penn State was
interesting.
Kind of odd to me, but yeah, let's see if I can find this list here. Like, a lot of really big programs. You had Arizona State, Cal, Florida State, Indiana, Maryland, Memphis, Oklahoma, Ole Miss, Oregon State, Pitt, St. Bonaventure, St. John, Stanford, Syracuse, UCLA, USC, and Washington, all declining invites.
That seems very odd.
It does. Because you would think that, I mean, obviously you need enough players and you need 7 or 8 guys to play, and maybe the transfer portal does shake things up a little bit and people are worried about hurting their stock in the portal, and maybe it's kind of maybe you have some guys that are interested in the NBA and you have an opt-out situation. But at the end of the day, I can't believe there's that many players that you couldn't field a team to go. Or if you're a coach, you make the decision not to go. It's just a great opportunity to prepare your team for the following year, because you can say, oh, it's been a long season, the guys are tired. Like, are you going to say that if you make March Madness? No, you're going to play on. And this is a great opportunity to compete and get better. I imagine you're bringing more money into the university from the television deals. And it's just really exciting for your fans too. Like the women's program, for example, unfortunately, they were part of that first four out for the women's March Madness bracket. And they were the number one seed. And I'm going to watch them tomorrow. 6 o'clock, they're going to be playing in the Bryce Jordan Center. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Like, I want to be excited that my team's in a tournament and competing for something. When Penn State won the NIT in 2018, that was so exciting to see them there and doing well and to bring home the title. It's a lot of fun for your fans. It's great for player development, brings in more money for the university. And yeah, so I can't understand why.
And not only that, that's an opportunity for the players too. Like, it's not just an opportunity for the fans. I mean, Tony Carr basically parlayed an NIT championship into being a second round pick in the NBA draft. Like, it's not insignificant.
Yeah, it still matters. It's still a very high level of basketball. Like, that list of programs I listed off were all pretty good programs. So, you know, shocking to say the least, but life moves on. Maybe I do think changing the window of the transfer portal would help. So maybe you have that transfer portal window later, because those guys are enrolled as students till May. So really, you can push it back a little farther and try to figure something out. But yeah, it's just one of those things that's really disappointing. But, you know, along with disappointment, we got the transfer portal. We might as well talk about some of the Penn State players that we will likely not see this year. They're going to be testing the market, as we should say. It's kind of college athletics way of free agency with the portal. You saw Kanye Clary, no surprise. He got dismissed from the team, despite being one of the leading scorers in the Big Ten. Not a surprise to see him in the portal. Bragi Guðmundsson, freshman. He's from Iceland. Really popular guy in the student section. But outside of that, didn't play a lot. Very few minutes. I didn't get more than 1 or 2 minutes in a game. And I'm guessing he's just moving somewhere to try to get some playing time. So can't blame him for that. Some other guys who entered the portal. You had Demetrius Lilly and Favor Ayer. So now you have lost not only Kudus Wahab, your starting center, you lose your second and third string center, leaving only Miles Goodman, the freshman recruit. And with freshmen, you never know. You know, Kebba Jai, we were expecting a little more from him in his freshman season. So you never know how a freshman is going to turn out when they get to this level of college basketball. And you have 18-year-old kids playing with like grown 24-year-old men. So you never know how they will, you know, match up despite having a lot of talent. So, you know, he's the guy there, but unfortunately, Lilly and Iyer have both entered the portal. So maybe they'll come back. Demetrius Lilly, I think, is more likely than Favor. Meach definitely got more of the backup center minutes than Favor. Although he was struggling with injury early in the season, so not much you can do about that. I thought I had some nice athleticism, and Lilly would oftentimes be at the right spot at the right time within the offense to try to get some, you know, easy points, easy layups. So that was something that both of those guys contributed off the bench. Maybe they're going somewhere for more playing time, or maybe they're trying to get a better NIL deal. Time will tell, but Mike Rhodes is going to have a lot of work to do to rebuild that front court heading into this offseason.
Well, at least the silver lining to all this is that it's not anything that he's not already used to.
Yeah, for sure. It's something he's had to do coming into Penn State his first year. And I would say the good thing is that we haven't heard any news yet from starters not wanting to come back. Obviously, Ace Baldwin Jr., he could probably try to go to the NBA, but hopefully comes back. I could see him being like a Jalen Pickett, where he just really ups his game in year two at Penn State. That would not surprise me at all. So if he comes back, that would be awesome. DeMarco Dunn, he started some games. You had Nick Kern Jr. You had Zach Hicks, who was lights out this year, especially in that second half of the season. And Puff really turned it on towards the end of the year after kind of having a slump in the middle of the season. So those are five really quality players that you can have starting or in the rotation. Probably don't want Puff playing center. He's probably more of a four, power forward. So you want a little more size at center, but to have five good quality players coming back, I think Coach Rhodes has done enough to prove that he's a very high quality coach. And he's a guy who I think is going to be able to recruit some athletic centers who want to play in that up-tempo style and of, you know, all the pressure Penn State does and play in the style that Coach Rhodes wants to play. So that's something that I think he'll be able to do, and it will be interesting to keep track of heading into the offseason.
Awesome. Yeah, well, at the very least, things are in a better spot than they were last offseason, where the whole program was on fire for a couple weeks. So we can at least, you know, rest easy that comparatively, we're in a better spot.
Yeah, last year we didn't have enough players for a starting five. That's like how many people stayed. So I'm glad we have more than that. That's for sure.
Right.
And we think we got six players staying who are not graduating, because you got those five. You got Jameel Brown, And I think that's it. I think the rest of the team is graduated or in the transfer portal. So, yeah, another busy off season for Coach Rhodes.
Hey, yeah, you know, but like I said, I mean, that's just what he knew the deal was. I'm sure this isn't anything that he didn't expect. So, you know, we just got to kind of wait and see and trust the process, as they say, right?
Yeah, trust the process. Still hasn't brought the Sixers a title, but who knows? Maybe it'll work out for Penn State.
Yeah, could you imagine?
Yeah, so speaking of heartbreak, though, with Penn State's loss, another heartbreak on the ice in the NCAA tournament. Women's ice hockey lost 1-0 to St. Lawrence. So a tough way to end their season. But, you know, really great season, second year in a row being CHA champions. I still need to get to a women's ice hockey game. That's like one of the sports that's on my list to go check out. I crossed off men's soccer this year. Actually, I'd been to like half a men's soccer game in the past. But, you know, for a full game, I'll count men's soccer. I went to volleyball this year, women's volleyball. I went to women's basketball this year. So I got three new sports this year I crossed off. I think women's ice hockey is going to be one I must have next year.
All right, cool. Yeah, I did a couple of those games when I did video production for GoPSU Sports. They're fun.
Yeah, they are. And it's kind of like one of those things where I feel like maybe if you're like a hockey player, you notice the difference in the game. But for like average people like us who are more kind of like football, basketball guys, wrestling, like, we don't understand hockey as well, but we see people skating really fast. And we're like to us, that's going to be, we're not going to notice the difference in speed between the men and the women.
Right. I think that's a fair assessment.
Yeah. So definitely want to check that out. Women's softball really crushing it at home this weekend. They've been undefeated in Beard Field. Is it Beard Field?
Yes.
Park. Okay, Beard Field, they were undefeated. So they took on a bunch of different teams this past weekend. That included Lehigh. They beat Lehigh 14-12. And then 4-3 the very next day. And then the next day, they beat Canisius 8-2, followed by a Sunday sweep of Binghamton 15-5. So a lot of really great performances from, you know, softball. And you saw a lot of success from men's baseball as well. They won all but one game this series against UMass Lowell on Friday. Or sorry, excuse me, Thursday, they won 3-2. Friday, they lost 9-11. And actually, I missed a softball game here. In the middle of all those games, softball also beat Cornell 10-1 on the Friday. So two games in one day, doubleheader. And then on the Saturday, this game must have been lit to be at as a fan. You had baseball beat UMass Lowell. This is like a football score, 21-14.
Wow.
Yeah, they were actually down 9-0 in this one, and they had like a 9-run inning at one point. So yeah, definitely really exciting there. Good series. They continued. Unfortunately, the run came to an end. They did lose 9-7 to St. Bonaventure on Tuesday. So that was unfortunate. And then their game against Bucknell today was postponed due to weather. So they'll be making that game up at a later point in the season. However, they were not the only ones who had success. You also had women's lacrosse who went on a road trip. They had a nice 12-11 victory over Cornell. And then the men made a trip to Delco, Springfield County High School, or not right. Sorry, Springfield Township High School in Delaware County. So our Delco brethren must have been very happy as Penn State lacrosse beat Marquette for the first time, 13-7. So really interesting. I'm kind of curious as to why they made a trip to a high school. Like, I understand, like, you know, basketball going to the Palestra and places like that for a home matchup, but pretty surprising to see them go that far away. But nonetheless, awesome job, men's lacrosse. They're moving up to number five in the poll, so they've been doing awesome. If they keep it going, and they're going to be starting Big Ten play. They got some big matchups coming up. And to kind of round things off, man, men's volleyball, battle of I-99 from here to St. Francis University. St. Francis hung tough with the Nittany Lions. The Nittany Lions were down 2-0. They came back, won in 5 sets. And then the very next day, they make the drive back from I-99. And, you know, St. Francis is up 2-1. Penn State comes back and beats them in 5 sets. So really, really tough battle. Like, I was not expecting like St. Francis to be the team to like really push Penn State to 5 sets in their schedule. I'd expect more of those like UCLA and California teams, but man, don't count out St. Francis in men's volleyball. That really good program, and they gave the Nittany Lions a run for their money.
Cool. Yeah. I mean, that scoreline, it was surprising, but yeah, love the tough competition.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Coming up into Nittany Lion Athletics this week. Oh, before I go into this week in Nittany Lion Athletics, I want to give a shout out to Cheekna Traer and Haley Kitchen. Both of them were named the Big Ten Men's and Women's Track and Field Athlete of the Year, as well as the Mid-Atlantic Regional Athlete of the Year. So that is a huge honor to have. That's something they should both be very proud of. So congratulations to them, and really looking forward to their upcoming track season. This weekend, they're going to be making a trip down to Orlando, University of Central Florida, to start off their track meet. So that'll be really exciting. Wrestling is going to nationals this weekend. Andrew, do you want to give us a preview of the wrestling team heading into nationals before I go over the weekend athletics?
Boy, do I. Yeah, we got some exciting stuff here on the slate here. So we've got the national championship tournament coming up here in Kansas City. That's going to be happening over this weekend. So you're going to have plenty of chances to catch the Nittany Lions in action, especially as they get into the later rounds of competition, which, fingers crossed, we hope many of them are going to be appearing in. But just to do a quick breakdown of some stuff that's been happening since our last update. So we had updated everybody that all 10 starting wrestlers for the squad are going to Kansas City. That has not changed. Carter Sirachi and Kale Sanderson have both confirmed that he is good to go. And the way that I would kind of qualify or classify Carter's mindset going into this national championship is angry. The guy is pissed that he didn't get to wrestle at the Big Tens, and he is, you know, all but said that he is going to try and take that out on anybody who gets in his way at the 174-pound weight class. He has said when he got the at-large bid and he knew that he was in, he made the comment that they shouldn't even give him a seating. Just have him wrestle every single wrestler at the 174-pound weight class. And he said he would take them all down within 3 days. So not only is he saying, like, you know, will I get through the tournament? He said, I'll wrestle all of them, even the guys who lose to other guys. Like, give me all of them. So his mindset is that he is just full-on attack. I think it's going to be very interesting to see how that knee of his is holding up. You know, we're going to get pretty good indication of that early on, because like all the other guys who are at the weight class, they're no slouches. So it's going to be interesting to see early on, like, how his health is holding up, how that might impact his ability to attack, which he likes to do so very often. So that's going to be very interesting to see. But like, from an energy and a vibes perspective, the vibes are up, I'll say. So we got him at number 9 seed at 174 pounds. One thing that we had mentioned during our last pod was at the 165 weight class. That class is loaded. There are a ton of guys in that class that could come out on top as the national champion. And one of those is our own Mitchell Mezenbrink, the redshirt freshman phenom at that weight class. He, of course, was the Big Ten champion at that weight class with a very dramatic win over Dean Hamady of Wisconsin. We weren't sure how the seedings were going to shake out, just because, like we said, I mean, there's so many guys at that weight class, but he was given the number 2 seed at the weight class. So definitely a high honor for him, just given how historically loaded that class is. So he's going to be, you know, we like to talk about how Carter likes to attack. Well, Mitchell likes to attack, but on steroids. Like, the guy is just all gas, no brakes. He's going to try and get his points. He's going to try and tech fall just about every person that's opposite him on the mat. So he's going to be super exciting to see. And then, of course, we've got a handful of one seeds. Oh, before I get into this, I should also mention that Bo Bartlett is the number two seed at 141 after his close last second loss to Jesse Mendez of Ohio State in the Big Ten championship. So going to be looking for a little bit of redemption, a little bit of revenge at that weight class. So we got both of those guys at number two. But at number one, we've got a handful of guys who are seeded number one going into the national championship. We've got Braden Davis, the superstar at 125 pounds, the first 125 pound Big Ten champion for Kale Sanderson, which, as we mentioned last time, is a crazy stat considering just how historically successful they've been over the past decade. Got Levi Haynes at 157 pounds. No big surprise there. He's been wire to wire nationally ranked number one wrestler at that class. Aaron Brooks at 197 pounds. Again, literally no surprise. He's probably the smoothest operator on the team. Just looks like an unstoppable freight train of a wrestler at that weight class. There are some guys in that class, though, so this isn't going to just be him taking a walk through the park like it was in the Big Tens. You know, he's going to have to work for it, but feel pretty confident about his chances. And then we got Greg Kirkfleet at heavyweight at the number one seed as well. He's looking to really kind of capitalize on what's been a great season for him. He's come close in a lot of different scenarios so many times, including at the Big Ten championship. He got his first Big Ten championship this season, so he's going to be looking to cap that off, obviously, with a national title. Collectively, the Nittany Lions are primed to repeat as national championship or as national champions. And I'm knocking on wood as I say that, but you know, if all the stars align, they've got a very strong class in front of them. All 10 of these guys are in a good spot to earn plenty of points, earn all American status, and earn a couple of individual national titles along the way. So it's going to be an exciting weekend.
Yeah, I think so. I cannot wait to watch some of the Nittany Lions wrestling. You'll have to text me when their matches are on, and I'll drop whatever I'm doing and make sure I get to that television. I'll switch over from the March Madness, but check out our guys on the wrestling mats. That's for sure.
The March Madness, as they call it.
March Madness, baby. Let's go. So yeah, the women's swimming team, they're heading to nationals this week as well. They start on Wednesday, so that'll be really exciting. And the men start their swimming and diving nationals next Wednesday. So good stuff going on there. We also have a lot of good baseball and softball this weekend. So Friday and Saturday, the softball team will be taking on Indiana. The men will be taking on Michigan, both at University Park. So home games for the Nittany Lions. So if you're a baseball and softball fan, make sure you check that out. Also hosting another Big Ten opponent, we have the men's gymnastics team. They dropped a meet last weekend. They had their best team score of the season. However, they ended up losing to number 5, Michigan. But number 6 in the country, you know, can't complain with that. Really good performance from the men's gymnastics program. They'll be going against Illinois at 4 o'clock. So exciting stuff there. And then on Sunday, big day, you know, again, on the diamond, you got softball and baseball with their triple header. And you have men's lacrosse starting off Big Ten play. They'll be playing at Ohio State at 2:30. So we'll see if lacrosse can continue their hot streak. And baseball, they'll be making a trip, or actually Pitts will be making a trip to Happy Valley. So keeping that rivalry going, in-state rivalry, that'll be fun. 5:30, Medler Field. And at 6 p.m., softball will be the team who is making up their match that got postponed. They will be playing against Bucknell in University Park. So a lot of Nittany Lions athletics going on, a lot to watch, despite it being March. No surprise, March Madness, not just in basketball, but everywhere across Nittany Lion Athletics.
That's right. Yeah, big things.
Yep. So any other points you want to talk about before we wrap it up and call it a pod?
I don't think so, man. This has been a good one. We got some exciting stuff going on, plenty of action to watch this upcoming weekend. So I'm excited. Like, this has been fun, but I'm also excited for the next one. So hopefully we'll have some good stuff to recap.
Yeah. Like, I just wish I could like not work in March Madness. Like, it feels like a sin that like people have to work and like miss out on this amazing sporting event that like goes on all day. Cause like, you know, NBA playoffs, like, yeah, they're great. Like, but pretty much every sports playoff is played at night when people are done with work. But March Madness, it's like all these games are played from like noon or 11 o'clock and on all throughout the day. And all I can think about at work is like, man, I'm missing out on some crazy upset somewhere. It's going to be like, you know, legendary. I'm going to say, hey, I wish I was watching that in person. So that was a little disappointing, but you know, as is life, got to be an adult, can't take off work. So
as is life, well said.
As is life. Oh, something we wanted to talk about that I feel like we keep on forgetting. Hoppy Valley Brewfest. They are now having a beer festival in Beaver Stadium. On a scale of 1 to 10, what is your excitement for level for this event? Because tickets, there's 3 different levels you can get. And tickets are going on sale very soon. How excited are you for this event for Hoppy Valley?
I would say extremely. You know, I'm hoping that I'll be able to attend. I love myself a good beer fest. You know, we're both craft beer guys in certain respects. So I'm hoping that I'll be able to attend this. But I mean, like, awesome event, good beer, good company in one of our favorite places in the world. So what more could you ask for?
Yeah. Beer, Beaver Stadium. Summer. Yeah. Can't complain. It's a good event. Something else that I thought was really cool, a little random, but we might have some Nittany Lions in the Olympics. So we'll be talking about that on the pod, you know, for those athletes. But I was told that Scott Hansen, I saw this on an Instagram post, that he's going to be doing something called Gold Zone. And it's going to be like NFL Red Zone, but for the Olympics. And they're going to like have all these split screens and no commercials. Like, how exciting does that sound?
That sounds awesome. Like, that sounds like exactly what anybody who has watched the Olympics would want. Because, like, you love obviously watching them because it's the Olympics, right? You love it. But you wish that you could see all these like little moments and stuff that happen across the Olympics, especially for like some of these sports that aren't going to get like prime billing and stuff like that. Like that sounds great. Like that, honestly, it sounds like that would be the, like it would have the exact same impact that Red Zone had for NFL football viewing. Like, I don't think it's hyperbole to say that it would change how people enjoy to watch the Olympics.
Yeah, like for me, there's so many events going on and like so many different channels. And it's like, oh, this isn't commercial and this isn't commercial. Like, it'd be nice if just one thing gave you all the action that was happening. And like, So like I'll end up watching like the triathlon and some track and field and, you know, maybe swimming because the US has some like really good swimmers and I like cheering them on. But like, it just, there's not enough time to kind of catch it all. And so many things are going on at the same time. So it would be really cool to just have it all truncated into one channel. That's what I turn on and I watch it and see everything going on. And it's nice too, because like the commercials, it's like, like I feel like I miss like half of like the triathlon or the marathon just because they're like, okay, we're going to take a break. And then you miss like 5 minutes of what's going on in the race. And yeah, so it'd be nice to like have something else to watch that's exciting while they're taking their time to go back into the marathon. So
right,
or whatever event's going on. So I think that's a really cool idea. And I wish I thought of that. Like, I wish I was like that ideas guy and like that was my job. Like, but it's not. I'm not a television producer, man. I can't be like, you know, Larry David and be like, I wanna write a show about nothing. And it's gonna be the greatest show of all time.
Vince, I'm pretty confident that you and I together could write a show about nothing. I feel very confident in our skills of doing that.
Yeah. I feel like it's just one of those things you could just copy so easily. But yeah, it's been a good one, Andrew. So tell us, how can fans help support us here at the Nittany Blues podcast?
Yes. So to all of our listeners, thank you as always. The best way to help us out here is by leaving a review on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you are listening to this podcast from. It really does help us out a lot. It helps the algorithm expose our show to new listeners and new Nittany Lion fans out there. So we greatly appreciate that. And while you're at it, leave us a review. Tell us some things that you like, maybe some things that you don't like and want to hear more of, or, you know, some new sports that you want us to get a little bit deeper into. You know, we love the feedback. We want to incorporate that. We want to make this a show that everybody loves and enjoys when you're here for the Blue and White. So definitely reach out to us there. You can follow us on all forms of social media at Nittany Blues or Nittany Blues Podcast. Check out our website, nittanyblues.com. You can listen to all of our previous episodes. You can learn more about the show. You can visit our merch shop, which we have some really cool designs that we pretty much guarantee you'll find literally nowhere else. So go and check that out. It helps the show. It's some cool stuff to kind of round out your Penn State wardrobe, and we stand behind it. So Vince, that's all I got. Bring us home.
Thank you guys, as always, for listening. It starts with I love you. It ends with I love you. And we want to remind you that we are
the Nittany Blues Podcast. We'll see you next time.